T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It is now 7:08 here at WCCO. Welcome. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I am your host, Geraldine Steele, for 20 years, and it's been a pleasure being here with you. There is so much to talk about tonight. Oh, my gosh, I had to pick and choose. It's a good time, honey. You may not agree with everything, but there's a lot to talk about, so stay tuned. And you are welcome to join us. Here we go. Mama told me not to waste my life. Spread your wings, butterfly. Woo! Yeah. 'Cause wings are made to. If you don't believe it, you better ask somebody. I'm just saying, ask somebody, because it's true. You better get your wings, baby. Go to the store, the spiritual store, and get your wings. That's all I'm saying. Susie Jones is in studio with me. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. Also, Shaletta Brundage. And we are the women that make it happen on Sunday nights.
Yes, we do.
Hey, now.
How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm just so excited because this election, you know, I have not been on since the election on Tuesday.
I know. Last week it was the Timberwolves.
And I'm still flying high. Mm. If there was one thing I wanted to say to those 100 women that are going to walk right in to D.C., this is what it would be.
What would it be?
Don't worry. They need to know who you are. Drown them out. Oh, it just goes on and on and on. This is my new anthem.
Okay.
This is the song that lifts me up higher than I ever thought. No matter how bad you think you are, no matter how many people tease you about what you look like, about who you are proof that it is time for you to be you. And I'm amazed at the women that stood up. They took the call during that amazing march in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
We kept saying, oh, are people going to be encouraged to run? Are they going to do it? Oh, my gosh, did they do it? So I have been celebrating. I think I've had a glass of something for the last 3 nights just to raise it up and say, go, women, go. You did it. We did it. We got out and we voted in droves around this country.
Yeah, record numbers in
Minnesota.
Record
numbers, right? Mm-hmm. I thought it was record numbers across the country. No?
It might have been. I just know Minnesota.
Yeah, well, yeah. Minnesota, you know, I knew. I really hoped, but I knew we would get out, particularly women and young people. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about both of those things tonight. But I want to ask the two of you.
Okay.
Okay. So did you vote early? And if you did you get dressed up to do it? Or did you stand in line looking good? Did you go on Tuesday?
Get dressed up to go and vote?
Yes.
Are you kidding?
Why not?
You got dressed up and went to
okay,
vote.
When I say dressed up, I mean like put your face on, put your wig on, you know.
Because you are beat
did.
To the nines
get
right now. She is
done.
Beat up in the face. Suit.
Wait, somebody ready. I'm just, look, y'all are really sweet.
You got a date later.
Let me tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
I am so hyped about this election. It's just life-changing. Don't y'all feel it?
Yeah, I feel it. It's beautiful. I mean, you know, when you have daughters and they see something like that, see all these women who, like the politician in New York, Susie, who was bartending a year ago, and now she is, you know, going to represent her district in Congress.
Right. You remember how people were putting signs and things all on Susan B. Anthony's mm-hmm. Tombstone, mm-hmm. and, you know, Hillary did not win. Can you imagine how many have gone to visit now to say, look, what we did. Look how strong this came. And I'm talking about people who are mostly Democrats, but there were Republicans in there too. But these women stood up and said, it's time for our voice to be heard. And I'm so hyped about that.
Now, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar called it, girls, a pink wave.
A pink wave.
I love it.
And that
I
night.
Hadn't heard that.
Yeah, because, you know, Minnesota, of all of our congressional delegation in the Senate and Congress, I think she told me there were, is it, so there's 8 districts and there's 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say, let me count. You talk a minute. Angie Craig, Betty McCollum, Tina Smith.
Uh-huh.
Tina Smith, Who am I missing now? Come on, there's
Ilhan
more.
Omar. And,
yeah, mm-hmm. Ilhan Omar. Mm-hmm. I think it's more than five.
Yeah.
Like half of the women, half of the contingent from Minnesota is women.
And then, of course, it was the auditor. Yeah. Blaha,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just so excited with the difference that we've made. I guess for me, everyone seems to go right back to the details of your life right after the election, right?
Mm.
And when it's an election that is this monumental,
mm-hmm.
I don't want us to forget.
Right.
I don't want us to stop and think, oh, well, we did that. That's great. Let's go on and talk about this and let's go on and talk about that. It's just too important.
Mm.
So every time I'm sitting at the table across from someone, it comes up, right?
Right.
And people go, can you believe what happened on Tuesday? And I'm just hoping that we will carry that in and just keep moving that forward.
Yeah.
I don't want to forget it.
It's interesting, though, because I'm not going to be the, you know, I'm not going to rain on our parade. But I talked to some men about it, and I'm like, you know, it is time that we have a woman president. It mm-hmm. is 2019 next year, 2020. Yeah. It has to happen. I mean, we've had an African-American president. We need a female president. And someone said to me, a gentleman, said, well, what we need is the right person. I mean, a male or female, we just need the right person. I'm like, no, we need a woman president. And there is some, I still think there's pushback. I think there is inherent, deep-rooted, is sexism, is that I believe that to be true, even with all the progress, even with our march, 60,000 of us in St. Paul walking down mm-hmm. John Ireland Boulevard to the state capitol for that marvelous women's march after Trump was elected. But I think we haven't quite hit that pinnacle yet.
So tell us why you think we need to have a female president.
To reach the mountaintop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've still, honestly, I mean, I really do feel this, and I don't mind saying this even as a news person. I think that if you look at Washington and look at all the committees, we are still predominantly made up of old white men.
And the New Yorker magazine cover that's coming out on November 19th says all of that.
Yeah.
I mean, the cover is beautiful. It's black and white with just little sketches of all of these men, older white men, you know, that are in D.C. in Congress. And all of a sudden, this door pushes open, you know, these women are pushing open this door mm. and they're in color. And so I went and ordered the New Yorker today because I gotta have that,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
I have to have that cover. And it's not that the men are terrible.
No.
It's just that I need my daughter and my two granddaughters
mm-hmm.
to see that we are as smart.
As smart.
That we can do this. And other countries have recognized that
yes.
already.
Angela
right?
Merkel. I mean, the list goes on and gone about powerful women in powerful positions.
That's right. I'll never forget when Liberia, our sister country, you know, Liberia, when they had their first president, I celebrated and I thought, now if this can happen in Liberia, come on, what is happening to us?
So here's a question though. This is something, because now we're getting, the next thing we're working on is 2020, right?
As
citizens, mm-hmm. we are working on 2020. And the question is, obviously, she's not going to say anything, but do you believe that Amy Klobuchar has the material, has the right stuff to become the United States president after Trump?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I've actually said that to her.
Have you?
I have actually said to her, when are you going to run?
Mm.
And the last time I said it to her, she says, we already have a woman running.
That was Hillary?
Yeah.
Okay. But now that Hillary's lost and 2020 is coming up and there is this.
I would love for her to run.
Yeah. I mean, she's rather Minnesotan.
Yeah.
You know, she's very nice. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, I didn't think Hillary was mean, but she had a hardness to her. Hillary did.
Do you feel like a president has to have a hardness to them, an edge?
No, I don't think a president. What do you think?
I don't think so. But you know what? I think the person, the woman who is going to get it, we haven't even met her yet.
You think?
I think so. It's kind of like Barack Obama
yeah.
when everybody had the, you know, the first African-American president picked. Was it going to be Jesse Jackson? Was it going to be Harold Ford Jr.? Was it going to be even Kwame Kilpatrick at the time that was tossing his hat into the ring? And that year, Barack Obama could not even get into the DNC, congressional, what do you call it? Every 4 years they have
the convention.
The convention.
Yeah.
Right. He didn't even have a ticket. He couldn't even get in.
Well, he spoke at the 2004.
It was the one before that.
Yeah. Okay.
He couldn't even get in.
Okay.
I mean, Kwame Kilpatrick was center stage. Harold Ford was center stage. And Barack mm-hmm. Obama was in the seat with us. Mm-hmm. You know, he couldn't get in. Mm-hmm. So I think whoever this woman is, she has yet to be seen or heard. It's going to be somebody that just comes out of the blue, that drops out of the sky. And we're going to be like, girl, where have you been?
Where
have you been? Write that book. Where have you been?
Would you feel if First Lady Michelle Obama ran?
I would vote for her tomorrow. The thing is, we have to we love the idea.
Yeah.
But it has to have substance. The person has to have depth.
Absolutely.
They have to have, I mean, this is the thing that I struggle
with.
But
we have a president right now that doesn't.
Correct.
Can I just say that? So why is it mandatory that she has to have it?
I'm saying the office, the person that holds the office.
Great. Got
must
it.
Understand mm-hmm. the world, must understand world history.
Yep.
I mean, they must read constantly. They must study constantly the history of this world and all of the wars and the Middle East and Eastern Europe and World War I and World War II and every conflict and every culture. And you must have a broad and deep curiosity for all of it. You cannot be single-minded and shallow.
Okay, so would you say Elizabeth Warren is a person like that?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, but I like Shaletta. I want to be surprised.
I want someone great. I want someone great, and I would love for it to be a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And 'cause we got a lot of turning around to do order to right the wrongs that are happening.
And I know
right
we
now.
Have to break, but I'm telling you, the biggest statistic is that the truth is that at some certain point, hold on, Shaletta, I got to finish my thought.
Mm-hmm.
More people in the United States of America by a certain year are going to be people of color than whites. And I think that the white people, particularly in power, are freaking out. And when it becomes obvious that there are more people of color than whites, something's got to give. You can't have 25 old white men making all the decisions for a country that's so diverse.
And I'm saying that right now, but I still want to reiterate that it is really course correction.
Okay.
Whoever it is, it has to be a movement of course correction, because the path we have gone down for 2 years now has been devastating. Devastating with the debt, devastating with all of it. And so it has to be course corrected.
All right.
And that's
so
what I'm looking for.
I'll stop talking. I know you have a guest.
No,
do you have a guest? I thought
no,
she
we don't have a guest at 7:20.
But Shaletta's just making
I
me
know.
Leave.
Well, she wants to stick to it, you know. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. You're listening to Still Talking. Thanks so much, Susie.
All right. Good night.
Okay, so we figured it all out. We do not have a guest at 7:20.
So I'm the guest.
Sister Girlfriend is back. Hey, now. Okay, first of all, can I just say that I took pictures of people with their I voted button. I wore my little sticker so proudly.
Mm.
And for those that didn't get it, I want to know what your problem is.
I wore mine.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Where is it now?
I don't know. It fell on the floor when I was. I covered the Democrats in St. Paul at the Intercontinental Hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where I talked to
the
Amy.
Old Radisson.
About, about the pink wave. But. No, I voted before work because we all had that long day. You know, people, it's funny, we had a couple new people with us this time.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, what's the plan? Who's going to do, what time are we going to come to us in the field? Who should we interview? Like, real set. I'm like, dude, here's how elections go. You want to hear? You go there, you wait, and then all hell breaks loose, and then it's Wednesday.
And then it's Wednesday. It's so true. Did you watch the election coverage that night on TV or
me?
Listen on radio? Yeah.
Well, I was in the middle of it. So
all
it was,
night long then?
Right. Well, I was at
until
the
it closed.
Well, I was there. And so every, you know, the national television is on.
Yeah.
So everybody cheers when something happens.
Right.
And then at some point in time, the candidates come up and start speaking, you know.
Right.
So it was Tina Smith, Amy Klobuchar, Ilhan Omar was not at this particular one. I think she was at her own. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Interesting.
And Dean Phillips didn't come to the one. He had his own separate one. Mm-hmm. So hold on. I have to sneeze.
Uh-oh. She has a sneeze. Here's the thing. I actually interviewed Ilhan Omar.
Oh, really?
At a speaker series at Mixed Blood Theater. They had this new speaker series. And it was probably this must have been August or September.
Mm.
Just a little while ago. And I learned a lot about her that night. She's very, very calm.
She is. She seems like she has a real soothing spirit,
you know, and she'll tell you, I'm a fighter. just watch what I get done. That's what she'll say.
Okay.
Right? In fact, she said it that night. Just watch what I get done. Because she's so laid back.
But I do, see, I'm always so negative, Nelly. I think Washington is hard. I really do.
It is. No, you don't think that. It's because it is. It's hard to get anything done. It's hard to compromise. It's hard to find somebody to be on your side. It's like Survivor.
Yeah.
You know?
See, now, I asked her that question. I said, how are you preparing for D.C.?
Right.
And she said, well, first of all, you got to start with the relationships you have in your state. Mm-hmm. Because many of them are either going or have gone.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, so you open up these relationships while you're serving your state, mm-hmm. you know, even in the state house. So she said, after, you know, when I go, I've already started some of those relationships and I'm so looking forward to more.
Mm-hmm.
So she's already working on it. She was ready for that. My biggest challenge, you know, for me is as I'm watching and I'm listening, you know, about who won and do they have the fire that I think they need? I'm kind of with you. Mm. It's hard. You're going to need fire. You need to be feisty, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she was so quiet, but she was so collected. If I went to D.C., I'd be screaming on day one.
I know you would.
Day one.
I can't even imagine you in Washington.
You almost have to be. Like, look at me. I'm here. I'm making a difference. You can't go to D.C. and be quiet. You'll get eaten alive.
Alive.
You will. You will literally get eaten alive. Your agenda won't come to pass. You won't get anything done.
But how can we say that when there are so many just in the House of Representatives that we don't even get to hear from very much at all? They do everything quietly.
Some of them don't get anything done.
Yeah, but you
quietly.
And I can name probably 10 different people in the House that are really well known.
Right.
You know, that you hear the most from. Same thing with journalists. You can name the ones you hear the most from on a national level. Mm-hmm. Then what are the rest of them doing?
I don't know, but she better go in barking. That's all I know. She better get the roof.
I don't know.
You better
get the barking. I'm going to watch and see because she said, hey, just watch what I can get done. And I think that says
And I think you have
lot.
A good plan. What's that? Who's that? Mike Tyson that says everybody has a plan when they step into the ring with me until they get hit. You know, you can have a plan for D.C., but until you get to D.C. and somebody knocks you in the mouth, your plan is on the floor and you're trying to pick it up. I mean, D.C. is a different animal. Until you experience it, until you are there, until you have to work with these people and the media circus that goes on there, you know.
Yeah, but this many women showing up, I bet there'll be lots of female bathrooms opening up. Remember how long they did not have a bathroom for women?
Yeah.
For a very long time. And I think the one that they do have has very few stalls, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I think it's just very few stalls. Mm. 100 women coming? Y'all got to build right now. Right now.
Okay, I got a couple of calls, ladies.
Right. You do?
One gentleman wanted to know, they didn't want to stick around, wanted to know, would you vote for, Susie, you were talking about, you know, the next female president and who we could possibly be, Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah, I would vote for Condoleezza.
Okay. Absolutely not.
Yeah. No,
absolutely.
Her
not.
Policy, because she was Bush's guy, and
absolutely.
I think that she might have conservative, and
she never spoke up when we needed her to speak up.
Yeah,
no, absolutely not.
Was
national advisor, Secretary of State? Absolutely not.
Okay,
not
wow.
me.
All right,
but she has the experience.
Oh, of course,
and she's smart.
Experience. She's smart. She speaks what, 5 languages?
Yep.
You know, I get it. I mean, she's a brilliant woman, provost of Stanford. I get it. At the same time, I need someone that's going to stand up when you have to stand up. Speak when you absolutely have to speak. You know, we can go back in history and look at a few of those relationships with the vice president and the president had that relationship where the one would tell the other one, I'm not going, no, that ain't right, right? It's the same thing with President Obama and Joe Biden as mm-hmm. vice president.
Mm-hmm.
They had that beautiful brotherhood, but at mm-hmm. the same time, if Biden didn't agree, he'd be like, no, I don't agree with the president on that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think he should do such and such. That's what I'm looking for.
And he's probably going to run in 2020.
You think so?
Yeah,
and he's too old.
He is old.
Well, how old?
He's like 100 and what?
Look 17. At Jerry Brown in California came back and righted the wrongs. You know, because they begged him to come back.
I think the millennials and we need energy. We need to be energized.
Young
I'm ready
people.
For a young woman, like Susie said, somebody we've never heard from before. We've never seen a young
you know, energetic, feisty,
smart,
been on the ground,
smart,
you know, grassroots, mm-hmm, you know, kind of like, yeah. I mean, the
old
guard.
You want another business person?
The old guard has had their chance.
You want another business person?
No.
No.
I mean, that's the thing. People talk about Oprah Winfrey. And as we get back, you know, yeah, is she wildly popular? Sure. Could she win? Sure. But again, back to the depth of, I mean, it is an important job. We don't want someone who's just pretty and shiny. And popular.
Well,
I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know. I don't know. You know, Oprah is so much more than that.
All right. Well,
you know, what we see is shiny, but if you look into her past.
Unless she gives us all a car.
And with that, we are going to take a break. Shaletta Brundage, you're hearing from, and Susie Jones from our newsroom. Okay, for real. Good night, Susie.
Good night. Love you, girls.
All right. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 7:34 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steel Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. And of course, with the election just happening this past Tuesday, David Woodward, political science professor at Concordia College or Concordia University in St. Paul, is joining us tonight to really talk about the youth vote, how these young people who just turned 18, many of them, that really got out and voted. You know, my niece that turns 21 in December, she had to fly home just to vote because on campus, for some reason, she didn't get her ballot. There were many students that didn't, so they drove 4 hours home or whatever they had to do in Virginia. Welcome back, David. How are you?
Oh, I'm very good. Nice to talk to you.
You too, sir. Before we get started, was this election as different for you as it was for us? Because seriously, watching this all unfold, I would get like incredibly excited and then like, oh no, incredibly, you know, like fear set in.
Oh, yeah. Part of it, I felt like it was 2016 again.
Right.
And then something would happen. It was very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know which way to turn, but now we see the turn of events and how things turned out. Was it the youth vote? Do you think that that was a powerful constituency?
Oh, I think the number, you know, we get some numbers coming back now, and it looks like it was one of the highest youth votes ever.
Ever.
And sometimes they measure 18 to 29-year-olds, so that's not just college, but it's first-time voters, too. And the first-time voters really got out in mass this time. So that's a great sign, isn't it?
It is a great sign. Do you think Parkland, the school, the students there, the graduates, the ones that are graduating in June, do you think that they had a lot to do with this?
Oh, yeah, I think so. And I think it's just some of the students I talked to at Concordia, they often would say 3 or 4 months ago, oh, nobody listens to us, and the issues are too complicated. And I think, though, that with those issues like the shootings, I think finally they decided we have to vote, and yeah, we have to be part of the solution, so they voted.
I was starting to get a little discouraged. I remember there was a journalist, investigative journalist that went to Irving. I think he was a CNN guy, and he went to Irving, to one of the UC Irving schools, and you know, on campus, just kind of walked up to people and said, "Hey, are you going to vote? Do you know who you're voting for?" And most of the students that were in that interview said, "I'm sorry, I'm not voting. Nobody cares. I mean, I don't even know who to vote for." So I began to get a little discouraged. And so I keep asking myself, how is it that young people can stand by and not do something when we're in dire straits?
Well, and a lot of them told me, at least, that, well, we don't know the issues well enough, and so we're not going to vote, even though there's plenty of websites and places you can go to find out what candidates think. But the one of the things that struck me is they don't like political parties anymore. Nobody wants to be part of either party. So oftentimes, when I was growing up, the parties were the ones that sort of gave you the information, and you kind of trusted one party or the other. And these kids don't like either party, so sometimes they're sort of out there as an independent, and it's hard to get information, and they don't trust anyone.
Well, it's hard for all of us to get the information. The websites are not like they used to be. You know, we used to get a ton of information. There were lots of debates, and it's just not like that anymore. And the candidates are not really going out making sure that the young people are that they have something hip and happening that they can show them to say, this is who I am. I may be 60 years old, but look at what I'm going to do. Look at what I'm going to do for you.
If these kids keep voting in this these numbers, I think the politicians are going to start having to talk to them.
I hope so.
To campuses.
Yeah.
But they got to do it a few times. They got to make sure that they're a voting block. They also, my kids were also very turned off by all the negative TV ads.
Yeah, it was a lot of that, but that's what you expect, right? I don't know if it even works anymore. Does it work anymore?
No, I don't think they do. I think they're just trying anything. And I'm with you. I kind of thought, oh, well, that's just the way it is. You get the negative ads. But some of the kids are really turned off by that.
Yeah. Let's talk about Minnesota for a minute when it comes to the youth vote. You know, a lot of people say that our state has been turning purple for a long time. But it's clear that we had a blue wave, really.
Yes.
It's pretty dang clear. So if that's the case, then how about the youth here in the great state of Minnesota? Were they the ones that got out and got it?
Well, I think one of the things we have going for us here is that kids don't have to worry about the residency thing. They can just go vote where they're in college, and they can go vote the same day. So that makes it easier. Some states you do have, some of my kids who aren't from the St. Paul, they can go vote still, and that made it a lot easier. And I think we've done well here with voting.
Yeah, we have. And I think, too, you know, the media played a big part in getting people excited because they kept saying, we don't know if the polls after 2016, we can't trust the polls.
Right.
We don't know about the polls. All we can do is report it. But what if it doesn't happen? What if it doesn't happen? And the volunteers, can I just say thank you to every volunteer that worked, that knocked on the doors, made calls, sent out text after text after text that got on my nerves. But seriously, thank you for getting on my nerves because it made sure that I kept calling or texting or sending to people I didn't think would get out and say, hey, make sure you vote.
And I think Minnesota was the highest voter percentage of any state in the country.
We took back our crown.
Just over 64%. That's not bad.
That's amazing. So did you
midterm.
So did you make voting a part of your syllabus this year?
No, I didn't. I am going to next year try to figure out a way for students to do a project where they can get other kids to vote, a poster or some kind of contest for 2020, where I'm going to figure out a way to do that.
That'd be great. Also, you know, if I keep saying to myself, if I were in front of a group of students, you know, teaching or whatever, I would ask them to bring in your I voted sticker and we're going to hang it up and glue it down. And I want to, you know, so we have the dates. Did you do it early? We can take statistics on did you do it early? Did you do it the day of? What did you experience? And I, because if people really understand what it takes to get it together for all of us to vote, oh my gosh, I think young people would be thrilled to do something like that. So I hope you'll do it.
And you know, my kids, like the kids at Concordia, they're concerned about the high cost of going to school and a lot of youth issues. But I tell them, you know, you still have to vote, because if you don't vote, those people over 65 are voting, and they get the politicians to go talk to them, and the politicians know they vote. But if they know these kids are going to start to get out, things will change a little bit.
So what you're saying is that they'll cater to the groups that are really out there voting.
Yes, they know who votes.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And if this keeps up, but you got to keep it up.
And I'm so glad you said that, because that was my next question. Do you believe that this group of young people will stay engaged, or is this just a one-time event?
Boy, I hope they stay engaged. I think there's a chance. And voting is becoming a little bit easier, even though I do think there's still a lot of states that are trying to stop people from voting, and we have to work on that. But in a lot of states now, I think it's easier and easier to vote. They're voting early. They're voting by mail. And that's going to help.
But we're still having problems. Ohio, Florida. Can you just tell me?
Oh, I know.
I mean, seriously, when I get to heaven, I'm just going to say, what happened to Florida and Ohio?
Florida can't seem to make I don't know who makes their ballots, but they screw them up all the time. They put things in the wrong place. That thing in 2000,
voting. It's happened too often now, Professor. No, that can't be it. It has to be a purposeful.
Yes, yes, yes. And then you find out that people, especially in the poor communities and the people of color, they change where they're supposed to vote. They take away voting places. So it's on purpose.
Okay, did you say color people's color?
Oh, no, people of color.
Oh, people of color. I'm sorry. Yeah. I misunderstood you. So, no, okay. So if they're doing this, we see it, we watch it. Why isn't it that we're staying on? I mean, why aren't lawyers showing up in Florida by the droves before the election?
Well, they should be. That's what I was. I thought the same thing that you did. They did the same with Native American voters in North Dakota.
Oh, it was terrible. Terrible.
They just couldn't vote. They made some little law that said you have to have a street address, and many of them didn't have a street address.
Right.
And by the time the lawyers get there, it's either too late, or these people just in Atlanta, there were, or in Georgia, there were just people waiting in line 4, 5, 6 hours, and they walked away.
Yeah, they had to. They had to. You know, I'm blown away that that's possible. That it's possible to actually take away, you know, all of a sudden a week before or 3 weeks before, say, hey, you got to have a street address. How is that possible that they can just automatically do that?
I guess they try and then they get away with it. And if they get away with it, they're going to try more. And I mean, we have the whole history of this, right?
From,
I mean, it wasn't until the Voting Rights Act in 65 that almost everybody got the chance to vote, and it's still been intimidation in a lot of states since then.
Well, I have a real problem with it. I keep watching it unfold. And one thing about Americans, if you take away our vote, if anyone experiences that one time, instead of saying, I'm going to fight and I'm going to vote the next time until it counts, most of us will say, nah, then what's the point? I mean, what happened in 2016 with the Electoral College? And I kept saying that here. Young people, hear me. There is no Electoral College in the midterms. You know, you count, darling. You count.
Yes.
So it's been really frustrating.
And that's
to
what
watch
you worry
it.
About. You worry that people would just say, oh, I don't care, or my vote doesn't count. And that's what you got to get. And there's more young people doing that. I think the elderly people will, they know their vote counts.
Right.
Because they've been through a lot of elections. They vote in every one, from school board all the way up.
Yeah, and school board is so important. So Tuesday, when all of this happened, what happened for your classes on Wednesday?
Well, my students told me they voted. And I think even a few of them might have fibbed a little bit and raised their hand and they didn't vote. I think I've never got that kind of response before. So I think most of them did vote more than I've ever had.
They had to fib about it. That's good that they felt guilty, so they had to raise their hand. That's a good thing,
right? So I think there was even a little peer pressure to vote, even though there wasn't a lot of activity on campus. But I think they read about it, and I talked to them, and I showed them little films about voting and all of that. So,
Well, finally, do you believe voting should be mandatory here in the United States?
I do. I don't know about mandatory. I do think they ought to automatically register people. Like when you turn 18, you're registered to vote. Because now in some states, it's hard to register. You have to go out of your way to go down to the courthouse, or you have to send something in. And a lot of people just never register.
Yeah, and if our children automatically have to, you know,
let
the military know, by the way, this is where I'm going, you know, this is where I am, surely they can do that.
A few states have already done that. It should be very easy. You just are registered. Now then, if you don't want to vote, I guess you don't have to vote, but at least you're registered. And at least when the election comes up, if you get interested, you don't have to worry about it being too late.
I want it to be mandatory. I want everyone I want it, because then if it's mandatory and you're penalized, let's say, okay, if you don't vote, that'll cost you $600. Who's got $600, right? But they need to give us a day off because people go to work.
Oh, yes. The day off would be great.
Yeah. And we're fortunate here in Minnesota. It's required that companies and corporations give you sufficient time to vote. And it'd be great if we had the day off in the country.
Well, a lot of the young people voted early voting and voted online. So things are changing a little bit, which helps. Yeah. And a lot of young people took advantage of that, I think.
Well, I'm just saying my niece had to fly home.
Yeah.
Her parents had to fly her home.
Yeah.
To vote.
I heard that happen.
Because the ballot did not reach her. Even though she filled out the application, the whole request for the ballot, it never came to her.
Yeah, and you see, I'm with you on that. Sometimes I think that's on purpose.
Yeah. Well, we can't help but think that, considering what's been going on in Florida, right?
What's going on in Florida,
Once again.
So there's both elections now are being, and in Georgia, they're still up in the air.
Yeah. Okay. Enough about that. I got to ask you one more question.
Yeah.
The wave of women that will now be embarking upon D.C., can you believe what happened?
Isn't that wonderful?
Oh, it's just wonderful.
It's just wonderful. And I think in many ways, I know the Democrats still have to get some rural votes, but the Democratic Party is really turning into an urban, diverse party.
Yeah.
And it's really, really great to see.
But hasn't it been like that since the Dixiecrats got out?
A little bit, but I think there's always been that worry, especially after Trump won, that the Democrats can't win unless they win in some rural areas. And I don't know now. I think the Democrats can really be strong in those urban areas and win.
Yeah, and really stick to what they believe. That's what I appreciate,
that's
being
exactly
progressives. Right. They are actually coming forward and say, hey, I'm a liberal and it's okay,
right,
and that's what I'm going to run on.
And Obama used to say that he got about 30% of the vote in some of these rural areas. And he said it's because he at least went out there.
Wow.
He went out and talked to him.
So you're saying that a lot of these candidates don't go?
Yes, a lot of Democrats, I think, have written off some of those areas, and they're getting beat like 85-15, 80-20. And it really, there's not that many people, but it adds up. So I think Obama was right. You have to at least go talk to people.
Yeah, well, it's not even that they add up. It's that they matter.
Yes, they matter. And if you talk to them, they're going to say, well, he or she at least came out here. And they care a little bit about us. They're not going to win, but we're going to get some votes there. So,
wow, incredible. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, as usual.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to speak to you.
And this has been a good one, man. I have a smile on my face the whole time I'm talking to you, because it's just been amazing.
39 seats, or maybe 40. They're still counting a lot of votes in California.
Last one I heard was 38 seats. Are you telling me almost 40 seats?
Almost 40, yeah.
And so what can we get done with the House?
Well,
having
kind
of a wave, but the Senate
I think it's at least the president does not have total control of the government.
Right.
So some things can be passed. Depends on if he wants to work, but at least now there's a check, which is what it's supposed to be.
Maybe not a balance, but a check.
A check.
I'll take the check, dude. I will take the check.
Yeah.
Professor David Woodward, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right. You take care of you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. I keep calling him Dr. David Woodward because I interviewed Bob Woodward recently, but it's Dr. David Woodard. So I apologize for that. He's at university, Concordia University in St. Paul. I had a class with him when I was there getting my degree, and I just think the world of him and really appreciate him joining us here on Still Talking. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a moment. By the way, I want to open the phones for you. We have a few minutes. How did this whole voting on Tuesday, how was it talked about in your church? You know, how did they address it today? Did they just kind of not? Did they kind of stay away from the election and what happened, you know, and just talked about something completely different? 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. Don't keep me waiting. I'd love to hear from you. So the question we have right now, we have a few minutes and we'd love to hear from you at 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. How was the election dealt with at your church, in your mosque, your synagogue, or even a TV evangelist that you watched today? Did you hear anything about the election? Shaletta, who do we have joining us right now?
We have Miss Ann from Forest Lake.
Ann from Forest Lake, welcome to CCO.
Hi, thank you.
Hey, now.
The majority of our sermon today had to do with the election and about how God has a plan and that he puts people in positions of power and authority to fulfill that plan. And it might not be a person we think is good or evil or whatever, but it is to fulfill whatever plan he has in mind, and that we are encouraged, no matter how we voted, to continue to pray for people in authority.
Isn't that the truth? Let's not forget about that. And thanks so much for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.
651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226 if you'd like to join the conversation. Did they even address it today? I immediately thought, oh, no, some of the priests or pastors or imams are absolutely going to stay away from that.
But did you hear it in your place of worship? Did you hear that this was a good thing, that no matter what, people got out and vote, and we were engaged, and we were, you know, educated voters? I mean, were you hearing that at your church, synagogue, mosque, TV evangelists, even on the Native American reservations? Did you talk about it? I want to know, because it's important. There was an article that just recently came out, and I'm going to talk about this in the Mom and Michael Hour, that talks about over 30% of Americans. You want to know what their religion is? None. People have walked away from churches, mosques, synagogues, you name it. Why? Because they feel like they aren't getting anything from it. Many have chosen meditation, yoga classes, you know, or trying their best to work for this planet to try to make it better. They've put all of their spiritual energy into doing that, not just their physical hands and their finances. They've put their spiritual force behind doing better for the earth. I don't have a problem with that. You've heard me say that here on Still Talking many times. It doesn't matter to me if you believe in a head of lettuce, as long as that head of lettuce makes you better. Now, I know many of you have gone down to see Book of Mormon down at the Orpheum Theater. And we're going to have an interview in the 9 o'clock hour with one of the actors. Now, of course, that show is really about how religion fools people in some ways. Well, let me tell you, this is the reality. It's not a play on stage. This is the reality that people are walking away from their religions. My mother's convocation of her faith was actually streamed live today. And it's amazing when you watch some of these things unfold online. You know, all the dignitaries having to give, you know, do a shout out to all the dignitaries that are there, or important people. That sort of thing. And I'm all for, you know, decorum and protocol. I get that. But no wonder people are walking away when you can't even get to what you came to get, which is the message of hope, or the message that is going to get you through the next year. No wonder. 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. So when I give out a percentage, like 30-something%, you know, one or two out of five actually, you know, saying I'm done with church. I don't know about you, but that's chilling to me. And very quickly, Shaletta, do you think it's chilling? Do you think that's sad? Do you think it's okay?
When I saw the article, I immediately said, I'm going to send this to Geraldine. And then life happened and I forgot. But it is amazing to me. And I, you know, I have a theory about what's going on in this country. And this is the first time we have had in this country the three generations of unchurched people.
Yeah.
So we are so far away from God. We have three generations of people who don't know how to get back.
I wouldn't say that we're far from God. I disagree with that. I say that we are far from church. Mm. Church is different, because people can have relationship with God in the privacy of their homes, in the privacy of a room, in the privacy of their car. So in that sense, I don't agree with that, but it is quite remarkable, because my sister, who is a pastor, my sister Janice, she says all the time, church is not just about God and faith. It's about belonging. And that's what a lot of people will miss, is that community and that belonging. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. You are listening to...
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.